pour a little out on the ground for the Winnipeg Jets. They are not dead, technically, Merrick, yet.
Wow.
The Winnipeg Jets still have a scintilla of hope in the playoff race. But you, sir, don't believe that the Jets are going to... Well, that's, I mean, technically, their tragic number is seven. That's their tragic number, seven.
Tragic number is seven. They have six games remaining, two of them at home, at the happy confines, although it wasn't the happy confines yesterday, at the MTS Center, and four away. They have Wash, they have Pitt, they have double against Toronto, they have the Philadelphia... No, that's Buffalo, sorry. That is, they have the Rangers, the Carolina Hurricanes, Tampa, Florida, New York, and the Tampa Bay Lightning again. So it's not the heaviest schedule. 78 points, though, and they're chasing 84 with six games remaining, tragic number of seven. Although they're technically chasing, they're not out, they're out, they're out.
They're basically chasing 86 because either Buffalo or Washington is going to end up with 86 tonight and be in the eighth spot. So, yeah, I mean, it's a steep hill to climb. But if you take a step back for a second, and we don't eulogize on Puck Daddy teams that don't make the playoffs, but we're going to do so here for a second because Merrick and I both agree it's probably looking a little bit bleak right now for the Jets. What's your takeaway? Because my takeaway is this. Everybody underestimated one thing about this team, which was the impact of home ice. And that's what makes last night so frustrating, is that if they were going to go down in flames, better be it the four-game road trip that they have coming up rather than being on home ice. You know, I just feel like the legacy will be the fans. And we'll get to that the fans thing in a second because I understand our big-time super special guest is on the line.
Yes, indeed. He is the general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins, 100 points, sitting fourth in the Eastern Conference with eyes on the lead in the Eastern Conference, chasing the New York Rangers and also chasing the St. Louis Blues for the President's Trophy. He is Ray Shiro. He joins us on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. Ray, thanks for doing this today. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine this afternoon. Thank you.
A pleasure to have you on board. And where to begin with another storied season of the Pittsburgh Penguins? Where do you, considering Sidney was absent for most of it with the one of the most high-profile injuries the sport has ever seen, Malkin goes into beast mode, Matt Cook turns his game around, Marc-Andre Fleury continues to remind people why he's one of the most elite netminders in the NHL. Where do you rank this season over the past five seasons or so with your Pittsburgh Penguins?
That's a good question. It's probably right up there. Just we've had a team here. This is my sixth year here, and we've seen the maturation of a number of these younger players, from Malkin and Crosby, who's back obviously, but Marc-Andre Fleury, and these guys are getting more mature as players and people, and you see them come into their own. And we've got some real good contributions from guys, as you mentioned, Matt Cook and Steve Sullivan and Pascal Dupuis, and of course, Chris Letang's season. So it's been a nice story so far in terms of our regular season, and our goal at the start of any season is to get into the playoffs. We've clinched a playoff spot, so that's a great first step for us.
Have you given any thought to building a small condominium in the arena for Malkin's parents? Maybe just a townhouse over in the 400. It's pretty remarkable. I mean, all joking aside, the season that Malkin's had, I think, he's been fantastic in the past. For whatever reason, this seems to be the season where everyone has the consensus opinion that this guy is, top three, top two in the world.
Yeah, I don't know who top one is, but he's going to be there. Yeah, he's had a fantastic year, and I think it's a real huge bounce back year for him after going out with the ACL surgery last year, and it was really hurtful for him and for our team, and he's a proud player. And even the year before that, I believe he felt that he had slipped in his game in terms of being mentioned as in the top three or five in the world, and he's certainly back there this year. And a lot of it has to do, I think, is his work ethic this summer and the determination he had, and he's been more mature on and off the ice. And he's just playing with that determination, and he's got the skill level, he's got the size, but just when he's down low with the puck, he's so hard to get the puck from. He's so determined, and he's got that skill package that not many people have, and that's a great combination. And he's got the skill, and certainly has added the will this year, and he's a the top player in the league at this point.
Ray, what do you think is more important for a team to have from player to player, a love of winning or a fear of losing?
I can't speak for my players, but for me, it's probably a fear of losing. And, and I think you always have to have that. And, it's great to win, but it's worse to lose. And, to me, no matter who you're playing, and you always have that fear of losing or not performing well or being embarrassed. And, that is a motivational for me anyway. And, winning is great, but certainly there are, a means to get there. And you know, once you've lost, it's difficult to accept that. And so I think you have to have that fear when you play.
How did Sid's injury change sort of philosophy or anything or outlook for you this year? I mean, how do you go about managing a team when you have a, you know, one of the top players in the world that could or could not come back? Did it affect anything, or do you just manage based on the expectation that he could not be back?
Well, I think, you know, it was always our hope that he was going to be back, and that was his goal throughout this. And, you know, the expectation that he'd be back at some point, and we weren't going to get in a situation where he'd go out and spend his money to try and bring in other players or other pieces, you know, at the expense of maybe not being able to add him during the regular season. So, you know, he had the 8 games where he came back, and now he's back at this point. And I certainly there was so much hype around when he first came back in November, and then when he slipped back in the lineup against the Rangers a few weeks ago. The games that he's played since then, he just seems to, you know, performed and been in a different place mentally than he was when he first came back, and knowing what to expect and having gone through for those 8 games. And, you know, so I think he's in a really good spot for himself. But the only thing we really do is hold a spot for him and just hope that he can, you know, at some point come back, because he's just a young player and a young kid that wants to play the game of hockey, and it's great to see him back.
Ray, I recently came across a quote from your father, former head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers, former head coach and general manager of the New York Rangers, and it kind of reminded me a little bit, as I, you know, if I just took the name Fred Shearer away from the equation, I could see Dan Bylsma saying this. I don't believe in star syndrome. I believe in the European system in all sports where a team concept comes first. I believe that there are no little roles, only little actors, and every man on my team is important. How much similarity do you see between your father as a coach and your head coach now with the Pittsburgh Penguins?
I think he stole that from my dad, for God's sakes. I got to check. I'm not sure.
No, that's from Fred. That's from your dad. I'm saying it just sounds like Dan Bylsma.
I was going to say, no, I think I really believe that when my father coached, and from having been around, I was growing up around those Flyer teams, and a couple of years he was with the Rangers, but specifically with the Flyer teams, and now having the opportunity to talk to a number of those players throughout the years who played for him, you know, I think Dan's very much the same in the fact that they have much different personalities, but they are player coaches. So the players, they gain the respect of the players. They treat them like men. They don't, you know, they don't embarrass their players. You know, it's a team concept, as we can say. And I think there's a lot of comparables, and I think Dan's a real sharp, smart person at the rink, away from the rink. He's interesting. I think he has a lot in common with the players, and he's that much not much older than many of them. But I think, you know, it's a nice combination to have, because I think the players want to play for him. They don't play in spite of him; they play for him. And you know, it's a team concept, and the coaches and his coaching staff are amongst the team. So I think it's a nice combination to have.
I'm going to ask you a question that speaks to my ignorance of your chosen occupation, sir. But what does a general manager do during the playoffs? I mean, I know what Bylsma does during the playoffs. But what do you? Every time I see a general manager during the playoffs, it's either you being really happy or you being very angry on camera during a game. So what's a GM doing while the playoffs are going on?
That's a great question to ask, because you know what? Now I got to tell people we don't do a heck of a lot. And actually, since the trade deadline, you don't do a heck of a lot. And you turn it over to your coach and staff, and you're there to help support them and all those things. But we really turn our attention. It's great where the coach is living the moment. And you know, we play the Islanders tonight, and we play the Islanders on Thursday, and the coaches are preparing for those games, preparing for potential playoff opponents. And as a manager, since the trade deadline, you're actually looking toward next year. You're looking at college free agents. You're looking, preparing for the draft with your staff. You're looking maybe at some junior players. That's our life. And, of course, you know, all we do during the playoffs is worry and, as I said, have that fear of losing every game. And, yes, we're a bunch of worrywarts during the playoffs. Other than that, glorified cheerleaders probably.
So that's fascinating. So as the playoffs are still going on, you're still in sort of draft mode, getting ready. I mean, all this other machinery still is churning in the background while the Penguins are in the playoffs.
Absolutely, and I hope. I mean, we've been very fortunate over the 6 years I've been here. This is my 6th year, but the previous 5 years, on a number of occasions, we've had our amateur draft meetings during the playoffs, usually have them in May sometime, and we're still playing. So that's an added benefit for our scouts to be able to come in and see our team play during the playoffs, and that's usually in the semifinals or something. And, yeah, that's, you know, we're doing that kind of planning. Every team's doing that as well, and you get the Memorial Cup and things. And but, you know, everyday focus for your as a manager certainly is on your current team, but also you're working on these other things, and that's, I think, what most people do.
Curious about your first draft, 2006. Previous, of course, you'd been an assistant general manager with Nashville, with Ottawa as well. But your first draft, controlling the ship of the Pittsburgh Penguins, Jordan Staal, you select second overall. I know Dean Lombardi and the Los Angeles Kings went pretty hard at you trying to get that second overall pick. At your first draft, how many other general managers decided to test the rookie general manager and see if they could get the pick?
There were a few. I had a few offers on it. Probably two or three offers, I would say. And I didn't. I probably didn't know. I as an assistant general manager in Nashville, Paul Fenton was handling the draft and still does, and has done a great job at it. And so I wasn't, when I got hired to be the GM of the Penguins, it wasn't like I was out amateur scouting all year. And so it was one of those things, really relied upon the staff that was here, headed by Greg Malone, who did a really good job here. And, you go into that draft and you've got these number of proposals coming at you. I didn't know our, I just got hired a month earlier. I didn't know our team that well in Pittsburgh. And, I felt, whether it was five deep or whatever in that draft, I mean, there were some, five real good players that were selected there. We weren't going to go wrong. And our staff really liked Jordan Staal, and, that was the guy we picked, and real happy with the choice. We won a Stanley Cup with him, and, he's been a really good player in this league, so big part of our hockey team. And, but, yeah, when it comes down to you're a month on the job as a rookie general manager, and, you read about these things where the teams are offering you things that sound pretty good today, but I look back at those, and if I looked at my notes today, I'm really glad I didn't do any of that stuff. So when in doubt, do nothing, they say sometimes.
Last one for me, Ray. You mentioned Matt Cook before as being a contributor to this team. Many people, our blog included, did not give him the easiest go of it last year. He is nominated for the Masterton. Did you ever see this moment where Matt Cook would be nominated for the Masterton?
Probably not, no. I mean, same thing with the Lady Bing or something. I mean, no, I think I never probably saw that coming. I didn't know what to expect after last season, after having missed the last 17 games due to the suspension. And, it's been a nice story, and he can't make the past go away. But as I say, you learn from things, and I think he's made himself a better person off the ice. He's obviously been a better person on the ice. He's been a huge, and it took him a while to find that game this year because he was kind of in between at times, and but he spent a lot of time with our coach and our coaching staff learning this, watching video and seeing how he was playing and how he should be playing. And, yeah, you can see the transformation on the ice. It's been a really nice story. I think he's got 19 goals right now, a career high, and he's a real big part of a real good team. And it's really nice to see, what he's done for his career at this point. And so hopefully that continues for him and he continues to really help our hockey team.
Last one, Ray, for me is about your father. I love hearing stories, telling stories about Fred Shiro, who was, the first coach to bring on a full-time committed assistant coach in Mike Nicoluk. As much as people put a premium on toughness when it comes to your father, he was also the first in the NHL, to my knowledge, to really embrace a European style of puck possession hockey with those Philadelphia Flyers squad. What was it like to grow up around that type of environment where you have, your father saying things like, life is a place where we spend time in between games? What was it like?
It was great. I loved it. I was really fortunate that, when he was in Philadelphia and winning the couple cups and going to the finals four times in 7 years, that I was 12 to 16 years old. So I remember everything. And, across the street here, the igloo is coming down, and that's sad. And, I spent 4 years there. And then when the Spectrum in Philadelphia was coming down, I had spent 7 years there as a kid, a lot. And it's sad. But that was the benefit of growing up around, my dad and his teams. And kind of, I remember when I was, 14 years old in Philadelphia, Mike Nicoluk was the first assistant coach in the National League in 1972. And I always ask coaches around the league, or ask our coaches here, who was the first assistant coach in the league? And if they don't know, you should know. This is part of history of the National Hockey League, and but they grew up around that. And you know, I remember with 1 year, I was 14. My father was a head coach of the Flyers. Assistant coach was Terry Crisp, Pat Quinn, and the goalie coach was Jacques Plante. And I'm around that stuff when I'm 14. That was amazing. And you know, you look back at those teams that won the Cup, and you know, there's three Hall of Famers on there, and you know, those were good teams. And as you know, they're known as the Broad Street Bullies, but obviously they could really play hockey. And you know, it's Philadelphia's proud of the those teams, and my dad coached them. I'm certainly proud of them, and I was really fortunate to be around that growing up.
And he should be in the Hall of Fame. Ray, thanks so much for this.
Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care. Ray Shiro, general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, I really do love Fred Shiro stories. I don't know where you are on the fog. I think you should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
He should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. I agree. That's, you know, Larry Brooks and I don't agree on much. We agree on on the respect that we have for Fred Shiro. I mean, there's no reason why he shouldn't. And there's no good reason why he shouldn't be in there as a builder.
Well, no, exactly. Other than, you know, listen, sometimes in the Hall of Fame, a lot of old feuds get played out over time and the guys that vote. Like, listen, Fred employed a rough brand of hockey. No, they're not good reasons. It's just old feuds that refuse. Why do you think Pat Burns isn't in there? All right. It's old feuds. Here's my favorite Fred Shiro story. I love this one. Yes. As it was told to me a few years ago. So, the fog is running the Flyers, obviously, and I think they're playing Minnesota, and it's a team they should have whipped, and they ended up getting beaten like 7-1 or something like that. And so, the next day at practice, no one sees a puck. And the guys are just skating. Like, Fred is working them into the ground. And they come back after the skate into the dressing room, and Fred's still fuming about the night before. And he gets out the chalkboard, and he draws a circle on. He says, "Gentlemen, I'm going to tell you what I had for breakfast this morning." And he draws a couple of eggs and three strips of bacon. And he says, "Gentlemen, this is what I had for breakfast this morning. Now, you all talk about commitment and contribution, and oh, I made a contribution, but we didn't win. I made a contribution, yeah, but we didn't win. I don't want to hear anyone talk about contribution. I want to hear about commitment. And this breakfast that I had this morning tells you everything about what I expect in the difference between a contribution and making a commitment." And the guy's like, "What the hell is Fred Shiro going on about?" He said, "Gentlemen, on this plate, on this breakfast plate, the chicken made a contribution, but the pig made a commitment. And that's nice. What I expect from the Philadelphia Flyers."
Hey, listen. if a vegan can tell this story, shows you it really made an impact. All right. With that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
That's a hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Sedin is not English for punch me or headlock me in a scrum.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
The two things I want to say about Shiro. First off, I think it's a tribute to how much respect that guy has that his staff will be continually poached. Going forward, Fletcher already off Botterell. To Mini. Botterell's next, and it's going to be like that as long as Shiro's in Pittsburgh, and as long as they remain as good as they've been, it's going to be a talent factory there for front office talent. The other thing I want to ask you though is, so I respect Shiro like nobody's business. I think he's a fantastic general manager. I think he's a great ambassador for that franchise. He's a great manager of talent, but he's also a guy who definitely benefited from some extraordinary lean years from that franchise. So does he get too much credit, is my question to you, when the table was set with a number of high first-round draft picks that are still playing for the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Yeah, it's the Brian Burke argument with the Anaheim Ducks, because a lot of that squad was Brian Murray. But Brian Murray wasn't there to hoist the cup in 2007, although Brian Burke has always gone out of his way to mention that a lot of that was Brian Burke's team. And you're right. I mean, as we mentioned, first month on the job, it's a 2006 NHL entry draft, and Jordan Staal's his pick. Now, already in the hip pocket of the Pittsburgh Penguins, oh, I don't know, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, maybe Marc-Andre Fleury. There's the pieces are already there. But I think that's part of it. Now, he didn't hire Michel Therrien. Dan Bylsma was his coaching hire. Actually, I think he extended Therrien once, though, too, didn't he? I mean,
he may have, yeah.
I think he extended him once. But Dan Bylsma was his guy. So that's a key piece for them. And it's also managing all those assets, too. It's also keeping them under the salary cap. It's also complementing staff that keeps rotating under those guys. Because all those guys aren't going to win the Stanley Cup on their own. Right? It's not just going to be, oh, well, you got Crosby, you got, because we've seen superstar teams before that have failed. I mean, a lot of that work is making sure that, okay, as, you know, Rob Scuderi leaves, we got to make sure he, you know, someone else comes in and takes that place. Oh, Hal Gill's leaving. We got to make sure someone comes in and can take that place. Okay, we got to hang on to Brooks Orpik. It's identifying those guys that you can afford to lose, identifying the assets for the future that you can sacrifice in order to keep this team up amongst the elite in the NHL. But you know what, Wish? Every general manager sits on the shoulders of whomever came before. It's very rare. I mean, it takes a long time until you get that clean break and everything is yours on your team.
Right. And then I think it's also the thing about Shero that I really respect is he knows his team and he knows the psychology of his team and he knows what that room needs. I mean, you think about the additions he made at the deadline, the 2 years they made the Cup final. The Billy Guerin move obviously is identifying perfectly what that team needed. And then going bold and going after Marian Hossa. I mean, we could all make jokes about Sidney crying about needing a winger. but the bottom line is that that's a pretty damn bold move to make at the deadline. And they went ahead and made it, and it almost worked out. So it's top three GMs in this game, without question.
Oh, yeah, hands down. Hands down. And the one holdover from that Marian Hossa trade is still a big contributing member of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And everyone thought that he was just a throw-in on the deal. And that's why you got to be very, very careful about what you quote-unquote throw into the deal. That's Pascal Dupuis. Pascal Dupuis is the last man standing from the Marian Hossa deal, and he's a damn good player for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
I just got an email this morning from somebody asking me if I thought that Pascal Dupuis had a chance to win the Selke. Now, I don't think he's got a chance to win the Selke because I think at the end of the day, Jordan Staal's always going to be the Selke guy on that team, right? If you can't have more than one Selke guy. You got one Selke guy and that's it on your team, right? Yeah. Don't you think?
You could have more than one, but generally I think all the voters will identify one defensive player on the team, okay, say, all right, that's their version of Bob Gainey. Let's just focus on that guy.
Who do you think's got who do you think the Selke guy is this year? Patrice Bergeron, maybe? With Taves injured?
With Taves injured, I go Bergeron. I think David Backes is in that discussion. I think Louis Erickson is always in that discussion. And you know what? And I know you're going to say, oh, Merrick, yeah, you just because you love the player. I don't think he'll be there, but I think Ryan O'Reilly should be in the conversation.
Of course he is.
Who leads the league in takeaways, Wish? Who leads the league in takeaways? It's not your Datsyuk, it's not your Taves,
it's an arbitrary
not your
stat. It's an arbitrary stat. Coming up later in the program, Rob Ray to talk about the big Buffalo Sabres game tonight against the Washington Capitals and also all the stuff that we like to talk to Rob Ray about. Question of the day before we get back to the Jets real quick. Question of the day. The Boston Bruins, as you know, have a new ad campaign in effect. It's awesome. It's, what's it called? The Bear in the Gang, is it?
Bear in the Gang. Yeah, Bear in the Gang.
Bear in the Gang. So it was on Puck Daddy yesterday. It's a 1980s style sitcom starring the Bruins Bear, Brad Marchand, Jack Edwards, and Rene Rancourt. And it's hilarious. It's so well
it's
done.
Awesome.
It's so well conceived. And they told me there's going to be at least two more of them, and then they'll see what happens as we get into the playoffs. But it's such a clever idea. So our question of the day is, give us your NHL sitcom ideas. NHL sitcom ideas is what we're looking for. For example, this is from Bam 12481. Andy McDonald, David Perron, Alex Steen, and Chris Russell star in The Quiet Room with special guest Paul Kariya.
Our buddy Ace. Our man at Suicide Pass, everybody loves Raymond. Bork, that is.
I like
this
that
is
one.
From, this is from funny. This is from Chris Andoval. It's always sunny in L.A. because the Carter-Richards link to Philly and all the depravity and excess drinking involved.
That's true, man. That's very good.
Hey, have you noticed how good Carter's tan is? Have you noticed how good Jeff Carter's tan is? Dude, I tan quick.
I thought it was Jacques Lemaire for a second. But yeah, so that's what we're looking for. We're looking for NHL sitcom ideas. PuckDaddyBlog@yahoo.com. At Wyshynski, at Jeff Merrick, at MVSW, hashtag it on the Twitter.
Karen's got a good one. XKaren08 on Twitter. Perfect Stranger starring Alexander Radulov and the Nashville Predators. The Bachelor featuring Rick Nash.
He's Malky Bartokomus.
The Bachelor featuring Rick Nash or special guest Dean Lombardi explaining Columbus on the Big Bang Theory.
That's not bad. So Winnipeg Jets fans, as I was saying before, Ray Shiro so rudely interrupted us. That's my takeaway from this season. I can't remember another fan base that made the kind of difference they made, not only in volume, not only in decibels, not only in support, but creating this hostile atmosphere, whether you're Ryan Miller getting chirped about the silver medal, or Ovechkin getting chirped about Crosby, or a star player being booed every time he touched the puck. It was like watching an NCAA college basketball crowd take in 41 games of hockey in Canada. It was ridiculously fun.
Every time a captain of a visiting team touched the puck, he was booed relentlessly by the thousands at the MTS. And even last night, like, this is the one thing that I'll lament when it's finally officially over for the Winnipeg Jets. I wanted to see what this crowd came up with in the playoffs. Because this is the most wonderfully creative audience that any hockey team has this year, for all the reasons that you outlined. And even last night, you see that dude last night behind Paul McLean? Hey, Paul, the 70s called. They want their mustache back. That's like right, but like he's on the glass. Dude's got the ticket on the glass, and he thinks to himself, "What can I do to really get under?" And then he was beaking Paul McLean, like right, you know, that little sliver in between the glass partitions, like beaking him the entire game. I loved the Winnipeg Jets fans this year. Like, you know how I am about David Clarkson and Ryan O'Reilly? I'm like that, but about the Winnipeg Jets fans. Like, I put them on, you know, on the, around the top of, these are a few of my favorite things about the NHL 2011-2012. That's what I'm gonna lament when the Winnipeg Jets aren't in the playoffs. Not so much, you know, the players and, you know, the coach, you know, it's too bad, Kevin Schill day off. I'll lament the fact that we don't get to see those fans anymore. That's what I'll miss.
Yeah, and end of the day, they just didn't have enough firepower. I mean, they played gritty hockey, they played good hockey, but they just didn't have enough up front to really make this thing work.
More is on the horizon. I mean, Mark Scheifele's on the horizon, but I think the player that Winnipeg Jets fans are really gonna love when he makes it to the NHL, plays with Mark Scheifele and the Barrie Colts, Ivan Telegin, who's a fourth round pick of the Atlanta Thrashers a couple of years ago. This cat can fly. So don't worry.
And, you know,
and outside of sending Johnny Oduya away at the trade deadline, Winnipeg didn't make any moves this year. Like, they didn't do
anything. I said from the beginning it should have been a mulligan. It's a mulligan season.
Totally.
I mean, it's the first year there. It's the Thrashers carrying over to Winnipeg. It's a mulligan of a season. To the point where I thought they should have thrown their season is what they should have done and gotten another a big-time draft pick. But they hung in there. They competed. They won a huge game in Washington last Friday and really impressed the pants off me. So give them credit for that. And also the maturation of Evander Kane as a star player in this league, a streak of 13 games in which he had a point out of 14, carrying over from February to March. Dude's legit, and dude really kind of, once he found his comfort level in Winnipeg, became a hell of a player this year. So Winnipeg, again, not completely out of it. They are going to be 6 points off the pace. I'm sorry, check that. They're going to be 96. They're going to be 8 points off the pace after tonight because either Buffalo or Washington will win that game. Ottawa, though, big-time win in a hostile environment. 88 points, two in back of the Devils. They got 5 games left. And as we said before, they got 2 games now at the end that could be taken in a number of different ways. They got Boston, who's going to have nothing to play for, second to last game of the season. And now all of a sudden, you're looking at that Devils game end of the year. 2-point spread between those two teams. That might be a game for sixth place in the Eastern Conference, depending on how things break.
Here's my question about, and again, last night, who was it that got it done for the Ottawa Senators? As much as we talk about, oh, the premium's on youth, and it's a Erik Karlsson squad, and you know who got it done again for the Ottawa Senators last night? Daniel
Alfie Alfredson. Was there.
Daniel frickin' Alfredson, who almost has 30 goals this season. Here's my question to you, Greg Wyshynski.
Yes.
First of all, it's a two-parter, sir. Two-parter. One, okay. do you think he comes back for his the wink-wink year in the contract, the $1 million payoff next year? Does he come back for that? Knowing what you have to put your body through at his advanced NHL age, does he come back for the scant sum of $1
million? Oh, I'm sorry, it's a two-parter. I always write down the first part.
Write that down. And then the second part, if you answer no to part one, does it change your opinion of Daniel Alfredson?
Well, okay, I'm glad that we got to the second part because I'm going to answer yes. Does that nullify the second part?
It kind of does, but I'd be a little bit surprised.
I talked to Eric Nix about this. Eric Nix, rather, our good friend.
At our tweet up?
I don't know if it was a tweet up or another time, and I was of the mind that he wouldn't come back too because of the way that the contract is structured. But she thinks he's coming back, I think, is what she said.
For a million bucks,
earlier,
eh?
In the season. Maybe her opinion has changed. But I think he comes back again. I think based on what I heard from Alfredson and talking to him during All-Star weekend, he has been reinvigorated by this team. He really enjoyed himself this year. He loves the young players. And I think he kind of found that spark again this year playing with this roster. And I would be surprised if he doesn't come back for another go of it.
It's only a million. I know it sounds stupid to say, but here it goes. Dude, it's only $1 million.
I know.
And knowing what you have to, knowing what you have to do at his age. And sure, it's fun. And hey, listen, man, having fun and picking up a cool, seven-figure check at the end of the year, it's a pretty sweet time for most of us. This guy's got large bank already, okay? So it's not really about the money in a lot of ways, but in some ways it is. I don't know that I can see him coming back for the wink-wink year. I really don't. But then, does it change? If he does say no, first of all, considering everything he's done for that organization, and this guy has gone above and beyond to the point where really Daniel Alfredson is beyond reproach. Like, if he doesn't come back, really, I'm talking smack because this guy has done so much for the organization. I should just shut up. I should be John Tortorella. I should just shut up. I should just shut up, Brooksy. I should just shut up, Peter DeBoer. I should just shut up. But if he, knowing that he can still play at that level, and, you know, pocket 30 goals. Does he kind of rip off the Ottawa Senators if he doesn't come back for the wink-wink year?
Retires after this season, then he should be damned for not allowing them to trade him at the trade deadline and get assets back. This is no way to become a legend in Toronto, sir. Ottawa.
It's Ottawa.
No, that's right. Oh, I got my Swedes wrong. I'm sorry.
Did you see the second goal that he scored last night where he gave that, it was right in front of the net off to the left hand side, that little bump to Tobias Enstrom that backs off a little bit, just buys himself that perfect amount of space to tuck it in the net. Man, that is such a, like, that's like when you're deep in the craft. Like when you're deep in the craft and you've played like 15 years in the NHL, that tiny little moves like that just say this guy is big league.
It's also clutch players doing clutch things in clutch games. Which brings us out west to the boys in teal. Whenever you need a moment where someone has to show a scintilla of heart or the scant appearance of testicular fortitude on the San Jose Sharks, is there anybody else but Joe Pavelski that will ever step up? Once again last night, Pavelski saves their bacon, and the Sharks win a huge game. A rout, in fact, of the Colorado Avalanche. Sharks now in the 3 seed in the West with the victory, 88 points. Dallas, your 7 seed, 87. Phoenix, your 8 seed, 87. And then the Kings, 86. Colorado, 86. Calgary with their big win, 85.
29 goals for Joe Pavelski this year. Huge goal to open the game yesterday. And then a big one to finally, you know, put it was so far out of distance for the Colorado Avalanche that it wasn't funny. And then Ryan Klo, with a goal with under 3 minutes left, finally ices it for the San Jose Sharks. I love a team that at this time of the year, we're going to get to Rob Ray here in a second, and the Buffalo Sabres are doing this right now on a 4-game winning streak. I like a team that at this type of the time of the year says to themselves, all right, that's it. Let's just grab this thing by the throat and squeeze the life out of it. We're getting a playoff spot. That was the first time we saw that recent note with the San Jose Sharks for this entire season. And if they can continue, then they deserve it. They got the pair against the Dallas Stars, they got the pair against the Los Angeles Kings, and that's the season. Like, when you look at what's remaining for the San Jose Sharks, Wish, don't they control everything in the West? Like, as far as those final playoff positions
They really do. Yeah.
They hold all the cards right now. Now they're sitting third in the Pacific. But pair against Dallas, pair against the Los Angeles Kings. Wednesday they got the Anaheim Ducks, followed up Thursday at Phoenix, the Jobbing.com Arena. And then there are those 4 games that really decide what's happening in the Western Conference. To me, San Jose controls those final spots, 6, 7, and 8, as far as I'm concerned.
And a frustrating one for the Kings last night against Vancouver. Did not play all that poorly. Roberto really kind of came through in some big spots for Vancouver last night. But still, a loss and a significant one. Now they go on the road for more. Calgary, Edmonton, Minnesota. Not necessarily murderer's row, but that first game, as we mentioned yesterday, sir, the Daryl Sutter homecoming to Calgary with Calgary playing for their playoff lives. Oh, boy, that's fun.
Tragic number for the Calgary Flames, 9. And last night, a couple of things happened. One, Mike Ribeiro. Holy smokes, did you see that pass? Oh, wait a minute, it's the wrong guy. Did he think he was? Did he think he was in Calgary's end? Like, did he think he was in Calgary's quarter? And that was, oh, I got the wrong finish net minder. Yeah, that's not Mika Kiprusoff. That's that's Kari Lehtinen. Whose stick did I just put it on? First of all, so there was that pizza and that brain cramp from Mike Ribeiro. He did answer back a little bit later on. He scored a goal of his own, but that was the most aggressive. That second period for the Calgary Flames, and all the big boys showed up, right? Like Camilleri had 1+2. Ginla had a pair of assists. Jokinen scored in the first. Who was Alex Tanguay was all over. Mark Giordano scored a goal, got an assist as well. Contributions from the back end, winning key faceoffs. Like that second period yesterday was the best period of hockey I think we've seen the Calgary Flames play all season long. Now, what it does set up, as you point out, is a chance for Daryl Sutter to snuff out all that excitement, because the Calgary Flames have 5 games remaining and they can't afford to lose one. They just can't. They have everything coming out of the Calgary Flames dressing room in the past couple of days is run the table. We have to win every single game. Now, 4 of their next 5 are at home, so they have a chance. The only away game is at Vancouver in a home and home against the Canucks, but they have to run the table. How much hand-wringing will there be when Daryl comes to town? And it could be Daryl, the returning Sutter, that could end the season for the Calgary Flames.
I appreciate you using the word snuff with regard to the Flames, because it's the latent headline writer that's inside of America would use snuff and Flames. You mentioned the big boys showing up, and they've shown up here on this program as well. Joining us now on the line, multiple Lady Bing winner, Rob Ray, here on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. How are you, sir?
Very good, and I take offense to that, the big side, okay? I've worked very hard in the last day or so to lose a couple pounds, okay?
Hey, before we talk about the this year's edition of the Buffalo Sabres and the win streak and the big game tonight against the Washington Capitals, I want to get this out of the way because the stories are fantastic. I was working with Brad May last night, Rob, on Sportsnet, and we were talking about the robes that your old trainer used to make for all of you guys. And Mayday said, you know, it was one of the greatest moments of my career as a Buffalo Sabre, and I walked in the dressing room in the morning skate, and Pizza had the robe made for me. Tell us about your robe, Rob, your robe day when Jim Pizzatelli finally made your robe.
Well, I'll tell you, there was a lot of things when you came to the NHL that were very exciting, and this was one thing that nobody had ever dreamed of when they went into the NHL that they'd get excited about or it would be a big day for them. So, you know, it was just something Pi always did, you know, for guys that, you know, did a lot. It started off with the fighting side, and then he started giving them to guys that, you know, did great things within the league and all-stars and all this kind of thing. So with the Buffalo Sabres at that time, there wasn't a whole lot of them given out. So it, when you got that opportunity to get one, it was a great day. You know, I can explain a lot of different ceremonies that we had over the years of what type of entertainment handed out the robes to the individual, but it's not proper. But yeah, it was one of those. So it was real cool. Different situations all the time. It just depended on the person. You know, Charlie Huddy's ceremony in L.A. one day after practice turned into quite an event. But it was a good time, and they were always great. But I think everybody that looked at it, when it happened, there was guys in the dressing room that would get so upset that it wasn't them, you know, because it was like one thing that they desired to get. I want a robe. What do I got to do to get that robe? And that was a constant conversation within the room, you know, with Pizza or with guys that already have them or young guys coming in. How did you get that? What did you do to get that? What's all about it? And it was something that was, for a very, very long time within that room was something very memorable and, you know, it was great that the guys looked forward to it.
I love it.
That's awesome. So the Buffalo Sabres tonight in Washington to take on the Capitals. Both teams 84 points. Buffalo, though, have 6 fewer actual non-shootout victories than the Caps. So they've got to finish ahead of Washington, basically, to make the 8 seed if it's between those two teams. I was reading an interview with Ryan Miller with ESPN last week, Ray, Robin, and they talked about... He talked about the expectations for the Sabres earlier this year because of Pegula, because of the hype, because of Ehrhoff and Reger and all those guys coming in. And he said that completely messed with their process. Do you see that as being the case, that maybe there was a little bit too much hype for this Buffalo team coming into the season?
Yeah, no, there was. The second, you know, Terry came in and made that promise that within 3 years that they were hopefully going to have a Stanley Cup in town. That sent everybody in a tailspin, and they just all they could think about was winning the Stanley Cup. And last year when they, you know, battled their way in to get into the playoffs, it was incredible. And you know, everybody was kind of like, all right, we're on our way, because it seemed like from the time Terry took over this team, they just got themselves on a roll, and they continued to do well. Once they got there, had not much left. But when Darcy had you know, the capabilities this summer to go out and start firing money around and bringing in individuals to hopefully make that difference, it just created a, you know, a volcano here that people just, we're winning. We're accepting nothing less than, you know, a championship here. And yeah, because I think early it got into those guys' heads, and it was like, you know, that's where we are. That's where we need to be. And at the beginning, yeah, it started off pretty well, but then when it kind of started going downhill, they didn't know how to stop it, and they didn't know how to handle maybe the questions, well, you shouldn't be in this position, and it just wore on them. And, you know, there was some transitional periods with Ville Leino and that coming in where, you know, and even Ehrhoff that, you know, they didn't fit in perfectly right off the hop. Now they're doing a fantastic job, but at the beginning, it didn't happen, and in turn, Ryan, you know, got banged up, and then he started getting injured, and then it was the Lucic thing. There was a lot of things that happened with this team this year that kind of, you know, got their minds going in different areas. But the, like you say, the biggest is, you know, the expectations, and then it's all of a sudden when you started losing games, people just started coming down on them and questioning it, and they really didn't know how to handle it, because they never really put themselves into that, you know, the players within the room. It was the media and that outside saying, okay, now here you go, plus the fans feeding off it. So it's not something they asked for, but they just got. And I think they would have been a lot better if we just sort of taken the process of, hey, okay, now it's a building process. Now we've got a couple years here. And I think these guys would have come together a little quicker and probably improved faster, because I think it really set guys back for certain individuals, you know, that had so much pressure on them.
And when you have a nice little role like the Buffalo Sabres, Rob, as you mentioned, are on right now, winners of 4 in a row facing off against the Washington Capitals at the Verizon Center tonight. Sometimes, well, oftentimes, really, it's the unlikely candidates that step up, the guys that you never thought would be there come crunch time at the end of the season, but there they are. Rob, in that spirit, explain the chemistry of Trop, Foligno, and Ennis.
Well, you know, Marcus Foligno has done a fantastic job, and you know, he's come in, and he was a guy that never really got a taste of it during the regular season, and it seemed like every other guy in Rochester got a chance to come up because of the injuries. They gave Marcus one game. You know, he did okay, and they sent him right back down again. And, you know, there was always us sitting here, well, when's this Marcus ever going to come up? When are they going to give Marcus a chance again? And it was always that question. But however they handled it, it seemed to have handled it perfectly, because when the kid has got the opportunity, he's coming out, he's got a ton of fire, he's so strong, powerful, he drives to the net, he's got a knack for scoring, he gets himself in those positions, he's scoring goals, and some of them aren't pretty, but he's in the right position. And he just, he's done a fantastic job. Ennis was a guy that was thrown in a position because of they were desperate. They put him into a center position because he had played it in junior, and it was just like, here you go. You know, let's see what you can do coming off an injury, and at the beginning he didn't do that well. And it was kind of a lot of questions, oh, he's not big enough for it, all this kind of thing. But as he got healthier and he started feeling better, you know, he just excelled at it. And it was just something where he is using his speed, and he's getting in positions and winning draws. At the beginning, he was not winning a draw worth anything. Now he's got that down. He's been working on it. So it's been great. You know, you talk, who else did you say? Corey Trop there.
Yeah.
Corey is a guy that just would go through a wall to stay in a lineup. And he's a guy that works his butt off every night. And he's found a little bit of a scoring touch that probably they didn't expect from him when he first come up. He's been up 2 or 3 times this year, and he was just put in a physical role, run around, hit guys, and that's kind of all they expected from him. But when he had the chance to start play a little more regular, this offensive side started gelling a little bit, and it came out. And when you're putting these three kids together, and when they have played together, they've done extremely well, because it's just strictly hard work. It's just, you know, catch a lot of teams off guard. With Corey, he finishes every check. There's nobody safe with the puck when he's out there. And it's just, it's enthusiasm, young enthusiasm that has came to the forefront here when a team was desperately needed it and trying to find themselves. And, you know, they can pretty much thank this second half of the season on all those young kids.
Interesting stuff. So switching gears for a second, Rob Ray, I was reading a story in the Democrat and Chronicle. So our good friends in the National Football League are dealing with a bounty issue at the as we speak with the New Orleans Saints. But am I to understand when you were playing for Rochester back in 1990, you, sir, had a bounty placed on you?
By Jim Roberts, who was a coach of Springfield. Yeah.
How much was it for?
I think it was $200, but that was huge money back then.
What did you do to earn a bounty?
I played the game I played, and I always played with Scott Medcalf and Kevin Kerr, and we, every time you were on, you know, we caused an awful lot of havoc. But one night I'm in the bench, and it's kind of the benches in Rochester side by side, and somehow ended up being in their bench and, you know, tangling with somebody, and, you know, Jimmy's being Jimmy, and he kind of come over the top and talking, giving it to me about, you know, being in there and the type of person and player I was and all this kind of thing. And I just started laying it out, calling him all about the old man thing and all this different things that I'm not going to mention. And then, you know, the next time we go to play them, it's, you know, there's everybody's talking about this bounty coming up and all these guys telling how they're going to collect the bounty. And for $200, and back in 1990 in the American Hockey League was almost a week's salary. So guys were willing to maybe do something. But the lucky thing is I got called up just before that, and I never had to really feel the wrath of that. So to this day, they never had a chance to collect.
I've talked to a few folks kind of off the record about this, and to a man, they all kind of say that the bounty, there wasn't really a bounty system in the NHL. I mean, you know, there was always money on the board for scoring a goal or doing that kind of thing against a certain team, but it didn't seem like there needed to be that extra incentive that there is in the NFL. Do you find that to be the case?
Yeah, I had never, even the games that we played, and we played for a lot of years playing a pretty crazy style, never did a coach come to you and say, hey, you know, we're going to put this up on the board for, you know, if you do such and such. No, you know, we had small segment bonuses for a few years. It would be like 5-game segments. If you got your 10 points or 8 points, you might each get $100 type thing, but it was all towards, you know, team things, team wins and points. But no, never, never. I've had coaches suggest that maybe you should go out and maybe take care of a certain individual, but there was never any money added to it. And most of the time when that happened, it cost you about $500 for a game misconduct or suspension or something like that. So I would say, you know, maybe non-bounties cost me probably about $50,000 over my days that I got taken out of my paycheck instead of adding to my paycheck.
Did you have, because I remember there was that one, I think it might have been the last game ever at the Odd, where I think there was, I think it was you, Mayday, and I think was it Donnelly, all had bonuses for 300 PIMS or something like that.
No, there was never bonuses for penalty minutes. Maisie's he's being nuts. He dreams things. He's an No, you know what? We had a time where we were the only team in league history actually to have three guys that had over 300 minutes on it.
Right.
And that was Brad and Gordy and myself. And it was something that Brad was kind of not fulfilling his role in the last game or so of the year, and he really had to put his hard hat on there to go out and get enough penalties to get himself over that 300 mark. So,
he was begging the official to throw him out of the game.
Yeah, hey, listen, Brad's a great guy, but he was always so nervous all the time. He could never, if we were going out to get a fight, I got to get in the first one. Let me get in the first one. I can't. I'm not going to be able to stand there. Hi, you got to let me in. And he's just so nervous. I can remember the first when he first came up. And John Muckler was his coach, and he, you could never have a coach that loved an individual more than John Muckler loved Brad May. And this kid was still nervous every time. Every morning he'd go on the ice, he'd skate around the ice a couple times, and he'd have to come over to the bench and puke because he was nervous, and then he'd be able to go out and practice again. He was always worried about everything. If he could ever just put that stuff out of his mind and worrying about leaving people tickets, he would have been an all-star.
Last one for me, Rob, and I always ask this of any Sabre from your vintage. How many assists did you get from Porky Palmer?
Oh, Porky. Do you know what? Porky was in the building on the weekend, too. He was in town to benefit for his son, Butchie. I never got any because, you know what, I earned my points out front of the net, and I got them all. You know, that I didn't I wasn't. Porky wasn't on my payroll as he was for some guys. Yeah, that little foot on the door sometimes it created an awful lot of controversy for a long time, and guys knew it. And guys, and Porky's like, "I'm there for you, boys. Yep, no problem." And he'd fight if there was somebody in front of that door standing there. They had to move because that was Porky's position, and they knew that. They look up, they seen Porky, then they knew that that puck was going to bounce right out front of the net because his foot would be on that door. So
I remember Rob Keith Jones getting so livid about it one day. I think Marty McSorley may have got livid about it too, just like, this guy's kicking the door and the pucks are bouncing out in front of the net, and all the Sabres just be like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yep.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, it's true. It happened, and it happened an awful lot, but you know, I don't think financially Porky ever benefited from too much. We just let him steal more stuff out of the dressing room and never said anything.
All right, man. Hey, thank you so much, Rob Ray. Have fun watching that playoff caliber game tonight between the Sabres.
Absolutely. Heading over to the rink as we speak, but it's cold here, so there's no walking.
There you go.
Are you in
D.C. tonight?
Yes, sir.
Oh, Aces. I'll be there too. I'll stop by and say hey.
We'll be down there.
Take care, man.
Thanks, Rob. Take care, guys.
Rob Ray, analyst for the Buffalo Sabres. Yeah, they were bonuses.
Have you talked about the Porky whatever the hell thing
Porky,
is on the show?
Porky Palmer.
Yeah, have you talked about Porky Palmer's show?
Yeah, I mentioned, and for those that, because I so arrogantly assume that everybody's listened to every minute of the podcast, but then when I repeat a story, I always get blasted for it on Twitter, so I'm caught in this no man's land. Like, whether I should just drop the name Porky Palmer and everyone will assume that I know the story, or if I say it again, people on Twitter will say like, oh, Merrick already told this story. This is already repeating stories on the podcast. So if you don't know the Porky Palmer story, at the old Buffalo Memorial Auditorium, where the players would enter the ice surface, was right beside the visiting team's net. And Porky Palmer, who was one of the trainers for the Buffalo Sabres at that time, every game would stand right at that entrance. And when the puck got rimmed in on the boards, and folks, it was a set play. Like, they think that Porky probably got about 16 assists in the NHL for this play. When the puck was being rimmed around the boards, and as it would come to the gate, like where the players would enter, he would kick the boards, and so it would jet out a little bit. The puck would hit it and shoot right out in front of the net. So the defenseman, the goaltender would go behind the net. He's going to stop the rim around. The defenseman is chasing it into the corner, and all of a sudden, there's Porky Palmer, kicks the boards. The puck comes shooting out in front of the net. Pat LaFontaine, Alexander McGillney, take your pick. They get a freebie in front of the net. They figure he got about 16 assists in the NHL. That's the Porky Palmer story.
That's the Porky Palmer story. easy for you to say, Mr. Merrick. A couple of real quick things.
Don't break in a new tongue on the podcast, Wyshynski. Work on that all
weekend.
First day with the new mouth.
A couple of quick loose ends before I get to the question of the day. First off, we mentioned the Sharks before Rob Ray hopped on. Sharks right now third in the West, which means they have home ice. And this has become kind of a weird, contentious point in the last couple of days, assisted by a column by Ken Campbell about the playoff format. Do you like home ice, sir, for division champions under the current format?
No, I don't. I really don't. Well, because you'll have a situation where, well, let's just have a look at it right now. So who would the Florida Panthers be facing off against right now, Mr. Wyshynski?
Straighten's tie. The New Jersey Devils, sir.
Who has more points, sir?
Why, the Devils have more points than the Florida Panthers do.
So the Florida Panthers are essentially being rewarded for geography, not based on performance, but based on where they play divisionally. This will all be cleaned up with realignment, but still.
I just
don't like it.
I disagree with you, but I know where it comes from. It comes from the fact that I grew up with a divisional playoff format, and I cling to that nostalgically, the fact that divisions still matter. So the fact that the Florida Panthers are the 3 seed, have home ice, and are atop the Southeast Division, in my mind, means something. It means that the division has value. It means that the Capitals, in theory, should be looking up at the Panthers and saying, we want to be there, because not only are you guaranteed a spot in these playoffs, but you get home ice advantage in the first round. It's something that we want to strive for. Now, it may not matter. They don't really have much of a rivalry, those two. But yeah. I want to believe that it does.
It's like saying, you know, like, okay, bragging about being first in the Pacific this year or Southeast is kind of like bragging you're the toughest clown in the circus. Like, it's not that big a deal. It's like, it's the weakest division in your conference. There's no real need to go peacock about being first in that division. You know what I mean?
Did you see the biceps on Bubbles? That guy's the toughest clown in this here circus. No one's messing with him. No way. No one's messing with Bubbles, let me tell you.
The bearded woman's
pretty
tough.
Here, let me in this car. All you 13 move over. I'm getting in this car. Bubbles is coming.
The problem with the current playoff format is this, right? The only seed that really matters where you get the shrinkin' weenie, if you get it, is the 5 seed. I mean, honestly, if you're the 8 seed, it means that you got in, and that's all you care about. You're in. That's great. Let's see what happens. You had a shitty season. That's why you're 8, but you're in. You're not 9th. If you're 7, you feel like, I could probably take down the 2, because most likely they're in my division. But if you're the 3, or the 6 rather, you're saying, the 3 is a fraud. They're the weakest of the division leaders. I can beat them in the first round. If you're the 5, you're like, oh God, there's a really, really, really good team with home ice that we're playing. And they probably should be first, and we're going to get our asses kicked.
And who's got Christmas bulb weenie now? The Philadelphia Flyers and the Nashville Predators.
Well, yeah, but it goes the other way, too. If you're the 4 seed, you're like, why do I got to go through World War III just to get to the next round? If I had just won the first seed, this wouldn't be a problem. Like, the Pittsburgh Penguins, despite the fact they are beating up on everybody they play, they don't want to go through a 7-game series where you got to go
to Philly 3 times? Are you out of your
first,
mind?
No, of course
not. First round? Not a chance. That's why, that's why they will do everything in their power to catch the New York Rangers. Everything. But they will not rest guys. They want to face 8. They don't want to face 5. No one, I would even submit no one wants to face the Flyers right now.
You hit the nail on the head though earlier when you talked about the series in the West. They're locked in. I mean, we are getting Detroit and Nashville in the first round, which means that either the
one
Detroit
of the
Red
gone.
Wings, who everybody thought was going to be a cup contender but when they were winning 85 games in a row on home ice, either they are gone, or the Nashville Predators, who have been fine-tuning this machine for the last 3 or 4 months to become a cup contender, they're gone. We're going to lose one of those teams in the first round. Man, that's stunning.
Do you like that?
I do.
You do, eh?
You know what? Because the rest of the first round is going to be a bunch of things where, well, the lower seed could win. The only thing that you're wondering about is who Chicago plays. Like, if Chicago winds up playing San Jose in the first round, that's a hell of a series. But they're not going to drop down to the 7 to play Vancouver, which would be even more fun. So the Detroit-Nashville series in the West is going to be a war, and it's going to be great, and it's going to give us something to really care about in a conference where otherwise we're seeing, like, look at the playoffs starting today. We got St. Louis and Phoenix and Vancouver and Dallas. Now, Vancouver-Dallas could be a fun little series, but honestly, like, compared to Detroit-Nashville?
I know. Detroit-Nashville is – and, well, hey, listen, St. Louis had their way with Phoenix most recently. But yeah, see, but at the same time, Wish, you know what I have? Cause you're sort of nostalgic for, you know, hey, division still means something. It's the Adams. No, it's the Smythe. The Norris division's the best. No, the Patrick division. Like, I have a little bit of that too, but you know what I really have a nostalgia for as well? 1 plays 16, 2 plays 15, 3 plays 14.
And Ken Campbell made that point too, to go 1 through 16 for the entire league.
Now, if you follow, like, for example, the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, and I did this game on Friday, 13-4 final, the Cape Breton Screaming Eagles losing to the St. John Sea Dogs, 54 points separated that 1 through 16. It's a little bit different at the lower levels, whereas you still have a puncher's chance in the NHL. Like, it's not going to be that much of a tilted rink, 1 playing 16.
Before we get to question of the day, the other loose end that we got to tie up here, Taylor Hall. Taylor Hall will be out 5 to 6 months.
Months.
Recovering from labral shoulder surgery on his left shoulder. Hopes to be healthy again in time for next season. Leading our friend Pat McClain to say, when Hall struggles to find his game post-surgery, I wonder if Oiler fans will be as hard on him as they were on Hemsky. Probably not.
Probably not. And for the second season in a row, last year was because of a fight. This year was because of a hit. Taylor Hall will end the year injured.
This is your rap on Nugent Hopkins, by the way, that he doesn't have an NHL body. Do you think Taylor Hall is an NHL body?
I think he has an NHL body, but he's not playing like he has an NHL brain. Like, did he have to fight Derek Dorsett last year? No.
No.
Did he have to, I don't know, curl out of the corner without looking at an oncoming defenseman, which is something you learn in, I don't know, Pee Wee? Like, it was such a junior hockey move. Like, that move before Corey Sarich flattened him. Like, go back and look at it. He doesn't look up. Like, on that play, like, you have to know that there's a chance, and probably a good one, specifically considering it's your provincial rival, the Calgary Flames, that on that play, yeah, someone's going to drop down. And also goes to the fact you need to know who's on the ice, too. And if you know that it's Corey Sarich out there, there's a really good chance. You know, go back to, was it 06 when he dropped Patrick Marleau in the opening round of the playoffs in game 3, 4, 5, I can't remember. There's a good chance, because that's his calling card, that he's going to drop down from the blue line and flatten you. Ditto if it's double nickels on Detroit, if it's Nicholas Cronwall. You can't afford in the NHL to just pick up the puck along the boards and without having a glance first to know what's coming. It was a mistake. He has an NHL body, definitely. Has an NHL skill set, chance to be one of the best players in the league, but it's too... unfortunate brain cramps that have cost Taylor Hall a complete season. One, fighting Derek Dorsett. Don't need to do that. Two, the hit on Corey Sarich when he didn't even have a chance to look, to take a little peek up before he grabbed the puck.
Look, I don't know about the fight, but I can only assume that this thing with Sarich was a result of Hall's on-ice lobotomy, courtesy of Corey Potter earlier this season. That's got to be it.
What a bad season. Dude steps on your face. Oh,
terrible. Terrible.
And then you end it with a Corey Sarich hit. It wasn't supposed to go this way.
This
is not the way it was supposed to go.
QOD was give us your NHL sitcoms inspired by the Boston Bruins new The Bear and the Gang stuff, which you got to check out. Hilarious video. Tom Ginsberg, don't have time to check if this is chronologically accurate, but the Sutter Bunch, based on the great hockey family, and the rival family would be the Patricks.
Oh, I'll take the Patricks in that one. I love the Patrick. One day I want to do a Lester Patrick show, dude. And we'll trace everything back to the Patrick family. Everything in the NHL. Every rule change, everything back to the Patricks.
Sean Kelly writes in, imagine a version of The Odd Couple starring Kessel and Sagan. Sagan would be the fun-loving, wild party animal, and Kessel would be the shy, nervous, quirky guy. Burke would be the angry landlord upstairs, and Chara would be the unusually large and goofy next-door neighbor. He would put Home Improvement's Wilson to shame when it comes to looking over fences. Love the show. Seems like every episode gets better. Sean, you're absolutely right about our show. It does get better every single
day. Oh, yeah. Actually, you know what? Shiro and Razor were really good today. That was a lot of fun. Here's a good one from Video Joe. Will and Grace with stars yet to be named.
Why?
well, because no one's come out in the NHL.
I know. I get the
game. Explain the joke to you. Explain jokes all the time to you.
Rihanna Marie, The Young Ones, featuring Avs Downey as Vivian, O'Reilly as Mike, Landeskog as Rick, and Stasny as Neil. Landeskog as Rick is pretty. Oh man, is that?
That's
pretty good. That's not bad. And you get major props for doing a Young Ones reference, by the way.
Chaos of 99, Briz and Mindy. Yep, not bad, not bad. Nanu, nanu. Or Matt G, how about the obvious? The Universe with Ilya. Gino and the Kid from Scott T, that's a good one. Growing Pains with Ebbs, Halsey, Ryan Nugent Hopkins, and the Oilers. Everly Grows, Kirk Cameron, Afro. Tambo is Mr. Seaver.
I like this one from Chris Kraft. That. Feign your enthusiasm for the Columbus fans and Rick Nash.
Feign your enthusiasm. Oh, there was another really good, I'll try to find it here. Who sent it? Who sent it in? It was a really good one. Oh yeah, Karen M again. Going Places, starring Rick Nash. Hashtag Emma MVSW. Thank you very much, Karen. Karen's good, man. She sends a lot of good ones.
Did you already do Karen's Everybody Hates Chris Neal? Because that was also very good for her. She's on a roll today. Jesus.
Karen, get your own podcast, man. You're good.
Yeah. Your own podcast.
You're good, dude.
Freaking so those were pretty good.
Karen.
All right. Well, I got a boogeyman. I got a Yahoo video today.
Really?
Yeah.
So
we're doing a little
video.
Are
y'all suited up?
Well, I'm wearing a tie because I'm going to the Capitals Sabres game. So I'm already decked out in my garb for that game, but I will be wearing a tie also to be on the video on the old Skype-a-roo.
For your video, will you be wearing makeup? For
no.
your video?
Come on, please.
Why not?
Because the video is streaming quality, which means that it doesn't matter what my face looks like, it'll be pixelated anyway. So it's not really my concern to get all dolled up with ye olde makeup
and such for the TV, as they say.
Do you think it's funny that when I do like either Primetime Sports or Hockey Central, which is simulcast on Sportsnet or Sportsnet One, that I wear makeup?
You really?
It's radio?
Yeah.
Is
that just out of function, or why do you do it?
I always do it now. I think it's just like the because I'm essentially a radio guy, as you know, but the TV is sneaking into me. Whenever there's a camera hot, man, and that's why I always in my work bag now I have my little Mac 30, just to make sure, just in case, because these Louis Vuittons that I carry underneath my eyes are well earned wish, as are yours. Mm. And look, man, I'm vanilla cake with mayonnaise frosting. I am very white. I do tan in the summers though, but that's nowhere on the horizon. So I'm always, any time there's a camera nearby, I was like, oh, I'll be back in 2 seconds. And boom, I come back and look like Doug Favell's mask circa 1972. Is that vain?
That was obscure.
Is that vain? What's the pumpkin mask? We all got that.
I know. I remember. That's one of the few. I get references occasionally that you throw out there.
I get references.
That's the show for today. I am Greg Wyshynski, a guy who sports.
Jeff Merrick here from Sportsnet, tonight doing Hockey Central, and that's it. That's my only assignment today. So thanks for a lot of fun, man. Ray Shiro was bomb track, so was Razor, our man Rob Ray. Make sure you check out the Washington Capitals Buffalo Sabres game tonight. Greg Wyshynski will be in the house.
In how the hizzy people, for
shizzy. How can people spot you, Wish?
I'll be on press row. I'll be wearing a nice sweater, and I will be wearing my skull tie. So please stop by and say hi.
Oh, so you go Robbie Fatorik style with the sweater and tie? You don't go with the jacket? You don't go with the blazer?
No, I go with the sweater, which I'll probably regret because it probably ain't cold enough for a sweater anymore. But I wear it anyway.
How cold is it in the area right now?
It's not. It's
Rob
a little
Ray
chilly.
Made it sound like it. Yeah.
It's a little chilly today, but it ain't that chilly, so I'll probably be too hot. But anyway, thank you, Elena, for booking wonderful guests and making us look good today. And that is it for the show. We'll be back tomorrow.
Yep.
And then after that, I am off to WrestleMania. And then on Friday, I believe, a special super duper edition
this,
of the show. Yeah.
This is going to be, and this was inspired by, well, Steve Lepore from one of our favorite websites, Puck the Media, sent us a tweet yesterday saying, that he really digs it when we talk about hockey and media. Hey, that's the focus of his blog, for crying out loud. So you're off to WrestleMania. So I'm going to spend an hour with John Shannon, on the podcast talk, because he was like 23 years old. The dude's like executive producer of Hockey Night in Canada. So he's producer of Hockey Night in Canada for like 20 years. He started Leafs TV, was director of broadcasting for the NHL for a number of years. So we're going to get all hockey and media on your ass on Friday.
I'm
with
actually
John Shannon.
Kind of jealous about that, but I'll be busy meeting Hacksaw Jim Duggan, so I can't be too jealous about it.
Hey, tough guy!
Oh!
Sweet.
Wonderful offer me weed, like you offered the Iron Cheek on that.
It was the big kayfabe moment, getting high with Cheek.
That was it. I've talked about it on the show before. Like, that was my big revelatory moment, was when Hacksaw Jim Duggan and the Iron Cheek were busted for pot in the same car together. I'm like, what's the American hero doing with the Iranian? It makes no sense, Daddy.
You know when it ended for me, when I realized that it was a cooperative sport? Oh, I don't know. The first time I saw a match and someone threw someone else into the ropes and then the guy ran back at him and ducked a clothesline. Come on, for crying out loud.
Well, the ropes are very... elasticity of the ropes are what fires him back. Right?
Okay.
No?
All right.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Did you see CM Punk go after Christian like that last night, man? He is ready for Jericho. He is ready for Jericho.
He does. He can't swallow what Jericho is shoveling, sir. Jericho-holic over here, number one. Shit, we were supposed to have him on the show too. We never did. Maybe post-mania we'll have him on.
All right,
We can't get him on now.
No, we can't.
Send him a note. See if we can get him on for tomorrow. How great would that be?
I'll shoot him a text. I know he's busy, but I do know, because I know Chris going back. I'll just say, hey, man, we'll talk about your dad playing with the Winnipeg Jets, and we'll just talk about WrestleMania.
Yeah, just tell him when we'll talk about Mania at all. We'll just talk about the hockey. We'll talk about Howard Chuck for a while. All right, everybody. Thanks.